Hello, this is Dr. Larry Wilson. This tape addresses the question of how to determine nutritional needs. It's a very important question because nutrition is a very essential subject and powerful therapy. However, it's also a very confusing one. There are at least 40 or 50 nutrients, probably maybe it's more than that, maybe it's closer to 100, and we're discovering new ones every day. There are so many biochemical compounds that the body needs that the question arises, how in the world can we figure out which ones are at least most important to set up a program? Because otherwise, we're popping pills all day long and the cost gets prohibitive. And it's also known that nutrients interact with each other, so that, for example, taking one mineral actually competes with the absorption of another mineral, and you can get worse. So that's the issue, how to determine nutritional needs. Well, there are a number of systems. This tape is going to focus on the system that I've found most satisfying, which is the use of hair mineral analysis in a special way, not the way that most people use it, because most people use it in a way that's called replacement therapy, for the most part. That's this idea that you look at one number and say zinc is low, so we give you zinc. Copper is low, so we give you copper. Cadmium is high, so we give you things to lower cadmium. And that's it. But another way of using the hair analysis. Before I do that, though, I want to quickly run through some of the other ways that are used, and maybe I'll make a comment or two. Certainly one method of determining nutritional needs is a theory or an ideology. For example, one of those would be vegetarianism. Another would be raw foods. Another would be the traditional diet. In other words, these are sort of general concepts that work for some people, especially if you happen to be fortunate. And so they generalize and they say, well, you know, everybody should do this. If one person works as a vegetarian, then it must be good for everybody. Or if raw foods are good for animals, they must be good for people. There are many such diets. You know, if the Hunza people live on apricots, then we should all live on apricots. Something like that. These methods, I've been through that. I did those myself. They don't work that well. They work for some people, but not for a lot of others, because bodies are different. Body chemistry is very complicated, and it's different in all people. And different people have different stress and strains on their bodies. And the other thing is that the bodies are changing, especially since the 1950s with the radiation from the atomic bombs and the atomic plants and other things. You've got a lot more, that's a big change. Then you've got the chemicals that we didn't have, say, 100 years ago. So a system that worked 50 years ago, 100 years ago, or more, you know, for some other population group living in the wilderness or whatever, they don't work that well. Now, another way, of course, is and related to an ideology would be like a religious method, like a kosher diet or some special thing that's prescribed in the Bible or in someplace else. And that's related to that. Another way that's done very commonly, this is probably the most common, is just to use symptoms and to use nutrition symptomatically. And there's a large body of literature, probably a million, probably several million pages of experiments that if you take vitamin A, it's good for your immune system. And if you take vitamin B, it's good for stress. And vitamin C is good for infections, and so on and so forth. And so you take the person's symptoms, and they have computer programs even now, and you just come up with, you need this, this, and this. Okay. That also, the trouble with symptoms is that they are often conflicting. Symptom pictures can be very confusing. And again, you may end up giving people, first of all, you can give nutrients that counteract each other. For example, copper and zinc are antagonists. And sometimes you need both, but sometimes you don't. And if you give both, you can cancel the effect, if that makes sense. Also, you aren't really looking very deep. And what about illnesses and conditions that aren't even manifesting? The symptoms often correcting symptoms isn't too hard in a lot of cases, but it can mask underlying problems that are much more serious. That's another problem with symptomatic nutrition. But that's the nutrition that most people are doing, that most doctors are doing, even most naturopaths, most nutritionists are doing what I call symptomatic nutrition. And they're using tests symptomatically. You know, they may use a lot of tests, but it's symptomatic. They may test your vitamin A level, or they may test your cholesterol, and then based on that, they'll recommend some nutrients, something like that. That's still symptomatic. Now, there's a lot of other testing mechanisms. Obviously, people sometimes use blood tests. They use urine tests. People use muscle testing, kinesiology, applied kinesiology. They use machines like the QX and the Scasis and the other radionic machines and the Dermatron and the electroacupuncture machines. They use acupuncture systems. That's usually used for certain herbs or Ayurvedic diagnosis or macrobiotic diagnosis, which is face diagnosis, tongue diagnosis, color of the skin, and other subtle things, iridology. So there are many testing methods out there, and they all have some validity. I don't want to say that these things are no good, because they do have validity. That's why they were developed. They all have advantages and disadvantages. I've been through many of these myself. Certainly I've been to many people who did kinesiology. I've been to a number of people who did radionic machines and electroacupuncture machines, blood testing, urine testing, hair testing incorrectly, meaning using it for replacement therapy, and macrobiotics and other things. What I find missing in most of these, and why the hair test method that I'm using seems to be more effective, is that they're missing what I call behaviors of the whole system as a basis. Behaviors of the whole system. And that's a systems concept. Behaviors of the whole system means that, how can we put it? There are some basic things that your body does, basic organism functions. And there's a sort of hierarchy. For example, your body wants to survive. That's very important. Another one is your body wants to produce energy. In other words, for survival, you produce energy, ATP, whatever. The energy is then used for every body function. You know, it's used for digestion and immune system and structural, cardiovascular, and so forth. So those are some very, very basic behaviors of the whole system. Now, there have been people in the last 50 years who've done a lot of research on this. One of the most famous was Dr. Hans Selye, came up with the stages of stress. And he found that his rats and all bodies go through specific stages regardless of the type of stress they're under. And he called them alarm, resistance, exhaustion. These two are behaviors of the whole system. Another guy who stumbled on behaviors of the whole system was George Watson. He called them oxidation types. And it turns out they're related to the stages of stress, but he didn't know that. But they're behaviors of the whole system. They're like the tune of the system, slow and fast metabolizers. Sympathetic and parasympathetic dominance. This is another behavior of the whole system. These are very macro concepts, so to speak. But if we start there, there's a systems principle in systems theory, which says if you understand behaviors of the whole system and behaviors of a few of the parts, you can understand the rest of the parts. That's the principle. But it also says if you only understand the parts, you cannot understand the behavior of the whole system, because the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I hope that's not too confusing, but the idea is if you just study parts, if you just study vitamins, if you just study minerals, if you just test your kinesiology for all these vitamins and minerals, or use your machines to do that or other things, you'll never get to the whole system, because that's how systems theory works. That's how systems are. They are greater than any of their parts. But if you can start with behaviors of the whole system and then get some of the parts, you can infer or figure out other parts. So that's really what we're doing when we use hair analysis to form what we call a metabolic blueprint of the body. We are looking for behaviors of the whole system. And fortunately, there is a guy named Dr. Paul Eck who synthesized and put together how to do this and how to interpret this test. When we look at that hair test, we're not interested in the body load of that mineral. We're not saying, oh, this person is low in zinc and high in copper. No, that's really not it. We may say that, but we're looking at the pattern, the patterns of response, the energy patterns. Is this body producing energy, and how much, how efficiently? What stage of stress is it in? Is it in sympathetic dominance, parasympathetic dominance? In other words, autonomic nervous system balance. Are there layers of adaptation? Because that's another behavior of the whole system, is that the body responds in layers. That is to say, it gets a sort of one insult. Let's say your liver gets damaged. Well, that's a certain thing that happens. Well, then the body begins functioning differently. The kidneys might take over some of the liver's function, or the energy might go down. Well, then something happens to the kidneys. Well, that's a higher layer. That's on top of your liver problem. Something happens to your kidneys. Then let's say you get into a car accident, so your structure is deranged. Well, that happens on top of the kidneys. And then there's something else, and it goes up in these layers. And so when we look at a hair test, we're looking at the top layer, and we undo those layers one by one. That's another behavior of the whole system. So that's the key, actually, to determining the nutritional needs, is to look first at the behaviors of the whole system. And we get a lot of help from people like Dr. Hans Selye, because what he did was, I don't know, maybe it wasn't too kind, but he would stress these rats, he shocked them. And when they would go into one of these stages of stress, like the alarm stage, he would then kill them and cut them up and analyze their organs and see how they functioned. And then he would analyze, nutrients and other, all kinds of components. And over the years, he came up with a lot of information about the qualities of the body and what's going on. For example, what happens to the calcium level when the body's in an alarm stage of stress? Well, he found out it goes down. Now, this makes sense, because if you drop your calcium magnesium, these calcium magnesium are sort of buffer elements. They're calming and relaxing elements. We call them sedative elements. And if you lower those down, what happens is the body goes into a hyper-excited state, hyper-excitable and hyper-excited state. And that's good for fighting and flighting. That's what you need. And so that's a very important piece of information. Meanwhile, the sodium and potassium levels go up, because, again, that's related to your adrenal glands, and the adrenal hormone aldosterone raises the sodium level. When we have that information, we can then look at a hair test and we can say, oh, well, this person has a low calcium and a low magnesium. And therefore, we know that this person is in an alarm stage of stress. Well, that tells us a lot of things because, as I say, Dr. Selye and others have elaborated what this means. The body's in this hyper-excitable state. The blood pressure goes up. The blood sugar goes up. The adrenal hormones increase, the thyroid hormones increase, the body is geared up for fight or flight. And a lot of this information that I'm saying is in the physiology books. This is well known. And he did the same for the resistance and the exhaustion stage of stress. So from knowing the behavior of the whole system, in other words, the stage of stress, we then begin to know a lot about the functions of various organs and systems of the body. As we know about the systems and organs, we can turn to the nutrition books now, which are all the pieces, like what's vitamin A for and what's vitamin B for. And we can say, well, we know that the adrenals need vitamin C, for example. And that in certain cases, for example, if the adrenals are all working hard already and sort of overactive, if we give more vitamin C, that tends to enhance that activity. Well, maybe we don't want to do that. And that's the case. When the body's in an alarm stage, we don't give vitamin C. It actually can make you worse. Nor do we give vitamin B, because B complex can enhance what we call the oxidation rate and make it worse. Instead, we might give copper. Copper actually destroys vitamin C. Now, you can give a little vitamin C, but you don't want to give a lot. Because we actually want to slow things down and return them to a more normal level. So what I'm saying is that as you get the behavior of the whole system, you get information from that about organ function, system function, and from that we can turn to the nutrition books, the diet books, and we can say, oh, well, okay, we can support the body in what it's going through by giving certain nutrients. Now that's sort of the essence of the system that I use and that I recommend. I've written about it in books and lots of articles. I learned it from Dr. Paul Sieck. I don't take any credit for this. It's very effective because it is not symptom-based and it's not based on parts. It's not based on looking at the pH and saying, oh, well, gee, we have a low pH. We have to give this. No, or looking at, you know, one little thing. It's starting with the macro elements, the most basic of the systems concepts, and going from there. For example, another very important one is energy. I mentioned that's a basic concept, if you think about it, is the production of energy in your body. Whether we do it from food or, well, that's what we use. Plants use sunlight combined with the minerals. We break down carbohydrates and fats and maybe even proteins, and we send them to the liver, and then they get transformed and eventually become ATP. Adenosine triphosphate, and these are high energy molecules that we use for fuel, and those things are used for all energy, you know, to power the system basically. So the hair analysis gives us information about energy production, the efficiency, but a lot of things. The two main aspects of energy production are what's called the energy pathway, and the other is called the oxidation rate. The energy pathway is similar to the fuel system on a car, say. In other words, it's the steps that are needed from the time the fuel goes in to the time it's converted to its final form. In your body, this starts out with eating food, what you eat, chewing, going into your stomach, being digested, moving down into the intestines, continuing digestion, being absorbed, going to the liver, often being stored or transformed in the liver, and then from the liver going out to the cells, being absorbed into the cells, and then going to the mitochondria of the cells, where actual ATP production occurs. And that's your fuel system of your body. Any problems along that way is going to reduce your energy. And what does it? Well, nutrient deficiencies, because there are thousands of enzymes required, there's organs required, and these enzymes depend on all kinds of minerals, vitamins, etc. And if they're deficient, the energy system doesn't work right. The other thing is toxic metals. These get in the way. These are like monkey wrenches in the machinery. And so they will also cause problems in the energy pathway. Toxic chemicals will cause problems. Sometimes emotional imbalances or autonomic nervous system imbalances will also goof up the energy pathway. Imbalances in pH, temperature, the body, other things can impair enzyme activity. It's similar to a car where you've got the fuel tank and then the pipe goes to the fuel. There's a fuel line coming out of the tank and that goes to the fuel pump. And from the fuel pump, it might go through the fuel filter. All these steps have to work right before the fuel goes into the engine and goes to its final form. So it's the same thing. And we know from a car that if you have a blockage anywhere along there or problem, it's going to affect your energy. The other aspect of energy is the oxidation rate in the body. This is similar to what we might call the tune of the engine or the RPM of the engine, because the body has an optimum rate for enzymes for all of its chemical reactions. And when that's best, your energy is much higher, and when it gets off, the energy production, the energy efficiency drops off. Sometimes you can see this if you pedal a bicycle in the wrong gear, for example.
you know that if you pedal too fast or if you pedal really slowly, your efficiency goes way down. You get tired. That's how you know. And the same is true of a car if it's running at the wrong RPM. You know, if you try to go 60 miles an hour in first gear, it doesn't work very well, and you wear out the engine very quickly. If you try to go 5 miles an hour in fourth gear, it doesn't work very well either, and you'll ruin the engine, or you just have no power because your efficiency goes down. Your body is somewhat the same way. It has an optimum rate or efficiency. So this is another part of the energy system, and you can make a quick, you know, quickly, you can evaluate this from a properly performed hair analysis where the hair has not been washed at the laboratory and you understand how to interpret the numbers. But it has nothing to do with the level just of calcium, say, or just magnesium or something. It has to do with the ratios and the overall picture. You have to, again, look at the big picture, the total systems behaviors. There aren't many systems that do that. Now, some of the oriental systems, I think, are the closest, like acupuncture, Ayurveda, macrobiotics, things like that. They are closer to that. And actually, hair analysis is very close to acupuncture. The yin and the yang and all this kind of stuff, that can be read from one of these tests, believe it or not. And the foods that we recommend must also correspond to these states. And that's where the research of Dr. George Watson, for example, was very, very helpful. He found when he was doing his testing, which he did originally by smell testing, that's how he first did things. He was a researcher, and he had these two rows of containers with things like liver and yeast and other smells. And he had a lot of these little bottles, and he found that people grouped themselves, for most part, into two groups. In other words, they would all go for liking certain smells and disliking others, and other people were the opposite. They did not like those, and they liked the other ones. And he first called them type 1 and type 2. Then he did a lot of blood tests to try to figure out what he was reading, and he ended up with fast and slow oxidizers. And it had to do with the pH of the blood, and he theorized that it had to do with the Krebs cycle, the glycolysis cycle, which is burning of fats, burning of sugars, and which is more efficient. And he came up with foods and diets and supplements that helped each type, mostly by empirical study. So we use that information. Once we have this general information, we can use his information to assess dietary needs, food needs. And this also is extremely, extremely helpful. Otherwise, you're just sort of guessing. The yin and yang concept of macrobiotics and acupuncture. This is another behavior of the whole system, yin and yang. It's in the Bible too, by the way. You know, the first chapters of Genesis talk about, and God made the heavens, and God made the earth, and God made day, and God made night, and God made the firmament, and God made the earth. In other words, yin and yang. They would say it's the basic divide. It's the basic quality of physical existence. Is this dualism or dual quality. And so actually determining that, which is similar to this fast and slow oxidizer, alarm and exhaustion stage, if we want to use those terms, is a behavior of the whole system. Is the system yin or is it yang? Is it fast or slow? So forth. Once we have that, this overall knowledge, then we can zero in, and then we can get finer and finer detail. And this is so important. I don't know how to express it otherwise, because it does get a little technical, but the basic principle is quite system. It's quite simple. It's the systems principle of first study behaviors of the whole system, and then you can determine behaviors of the parts. Don't go the other way, which is how most nutritional systems work. Most of them are going the other way. They're starting from some parts, whether those parts are symptoms or blood tests for vitamins, or blood tests for things like cholesterol and sugar, or whatever. These are parts. And then an attempt is made to infer the behavior of the whole system. And I have found that that does not work very well. People do it with hair testing, where we call it replacement therapy. Looking at isolated numbers and trying to balance them all out. Another behavior of the whole system that applies to the science that I do, the hair mineral testing, is called the mineral system. And this came out of agriculture, actually. The man that I identify it with is Dr. William Albrecht, who is a soil scientist at the University of Missouri, and who came up with something called the mineral. Okay, Dr. William Albrecht's contribution to soil science originally, the mineral wheel, was that he figured out that minerals in the soil influence each other, and they are kept in a sort of homeostatic balance. And by the way, whenever we talk about these behaviors of the whole system, they are what, in stress theory, they're called homeostatic states. Homeostatic states. I don't know if that term is so important, but that's what they call them. Anyway, he found that, for example, if you raise, if you raise copper, that causes calcium to go up. And then when the calcium goes up, it causes something else like sodium to go down. And then when that goes down, it causes another one to go up. And it's very intricate. It's very involved. And there are a lot of possible reasons why this occurs that way. An area that has received very, very little attention, but is very, very fascinating, is called biological transmutation of the elements. In other words, that these elements actually transform into each other. It's not that when calcium goes up, copper goes down. It's that, you know, one of these is converted into the other by biological systems. That theory came from Lewis Kervan, who wrote a book called Biological Transmutations, I think in the 60s. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. But it so upsets, you know, standard chemistry that it's gotten very, very little recognition. I don't even hear it ridiculed. I don't even hear it spoken of. However, in the hair analysis work, we actually make use of some of his concepts. Or it turns out that his concepts apply. How's that? I don't think we necessarily use his concepts, but we acknowledge them and are in agreement with them. And he explains it all very, very nicely, very simply. So anyway, the mineral system, again, is a behavior of the whole system. And Dr. Paul Eck took that idea and refined it and figured out how it works in human beings, you know, and animals, by the way. It works the same way. And so it is true that if you want to raise calcium, for example, giving calcium is not the way to do it. But giving copper will do it. If you want to raise sodium, you don't give sodium. That won't do it. But if you give manganese, it will do it. If you want to lower sodium, if you give zinc, you'll lower sodium. Now, again, this gets a little involved, but it's a fascinating idea that these minerals are in this balance. And you can't just sort of dump them in there and fix things. And if you think about it, the body would have to work that way because let's say you ate a high calcium meal or a high potassium meal, some fruit juice or something. Well, if just drinking fruit juice would raise your potassium, and you drank a whole lot of fruit juice, which people do, you would kill yourself. You know, you'd send your potassium up so high that it would just destroy everything. And if you drank a glass of milk that was loaded with calcium, you'd kill yourself with that, because the calcium would overwhelm everything else. So the body has these very subtle control mechanisms. And very often, by the way, it's the trace minerals that control the electrolytes. In other words, the little ones control the bigger ones. So, for example, they're finding out that the mineral boron, which is sort of an ultra a trace mineral, you don't really need very much of it, controls and has a lot to do with, say, copper and adrenal activity. molybdenum, very, again, ultra trace. You don't need much molybdenum, but it can control copper and sulfur and other things. So there's all these ways that the mineral system works, and this concept is used in nutritional balancing science. And by the way, that's what we call what I do, nutritional balancing science. The specific use of the hair analysis to assess the behaviors of the whole system and correct body chemistry. Now, another principle of the whole system is that ratios are more important than levels. Now, I'm talking here about a hair analysis. But I can generalize that in a systems approach. It's the idea that ratios are comparisons, relationships. And in a system, it is the relationships of the parts that are more important than the parts themselves. So one of the other principles that we use is we look at ratios, and ratios are most important, much more important than the levels of minerals. And again, this is different from most of your symptomatic nutrition, because they look at levels, whether it's levels of vitamins, levels of minerals, levels of pH, you know, all this kind of stuff. These are levels, and they do give information. But what we find is that ratios and patterns are mixtures of ratios and things like that, are much more important than the actual levels. That's a hard concept, and I know my mentor, Dr. Paul Eck, he found that it was hard enough to figure out all these levels on the hair analysis, and then to change and get into ratios and patterns is even more complicated. But that's where you're getting into systems thinking, is when you start looking at relationships and comparisons. Another principle of the whole system is that when you look at a body, you know, whether, no matter what you're looking at, let's say you're looking at the vitamin C level or you're looking at the calcium level, you're actually looking at a reflection of all aspects of that person's functioning. And that's very important, because often we don't think that way. We think of, oh, that must mean, you know, if her calcium's high, that they're eating too much, or if they're low, you're not eating enough, something like that. But no, it's more than that. For example, it might have to do with their heredity and their genetics. It might have to do with their upbringing and, you know, the way their body absorbs food because of the foods they were raised on, say. It might have to do with their attitude, believe it or not, because your absorption of food and calcium and other things has to do with the autonomic balance, and the people who are in a sympathetic state where it shuts down your digestion, they don't absorb very much. The people who are in a parasympathetic state, they absorb more. It may have to do with some disease they have, you know, that's independent of their nutrition. And so you want to think about that. And so when we look at the whole system and the behavior of the whole system, part of it is to realize that whatever we're looking at, whatever test it is or indicator, is not just reflecting that little item, but it's reflecting an entire person. Mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, past, as well as present. And so that's another behavior of the whole system. Another principle is that when you look at anything, a number, say a level of vitamin C or anything at all, zinc on a hair test or cadmium, you're looking at adaptations and compensations. In other words, that number does not exist in isolation. And there are forces at work on that person that may be pushing that number up, and there's forces that may be pushing it down. And what you're seeing is a composite, is a sort of a, you know, it's a sum of all those. And so that's another systems idea. And without knowing the system, without understanding something about the system, the number doesn't mean that much. I'll give an example. Zinc lowers sodium in the body. This is one of the mineral system principles. Well, when you see a low zinc on a hair test, there's a couple possibilities. One is there's a zinc deficiency. That's possible. Another one is that actually, that zinc is being retained inside the body for some reason. Another one is that the sodium is too low and the zinc is being held down to raise the sodium, and this happens all the time. So, and there could be other ones too. But anyway, the idea is that just looking at the zinc level alone will not tell you much. What tells you a lot more is to realize that when you're looking at any level, anything, that it is the sum of a bunch of adaptations and compensations, and only by looking at the whole system can you, the behavior of the whole system and the state of the whole system, can you really interpret the meaning of the of what you're looking at. Now, there's another principle, which I call in a book. I call it the averaging principle, and this is the idea that whenever you look at the body, you're looking at a dynamic system. That is, it's changing all the time. And this is where blood tests for nutrition and kinesiology run into problems, I want to know, because, for example, let's say you go to your nutritionist at 9 in the morning. Well, your body may be in a very sympathetic state. You're rested. You're up and at 'em. Say you just had a cup of coffee or something, whatever. And they measure through some means, whether it's through a radionic machine or a blood test or a hair test or not a hair test, because a hair test is long-term, but a blood test or kinesiology or a machine that gives you an instantaneous reading. And based on that reading, they say to you, oh, gee, you know, you need more of this vitamin and more of that one, and you shouldn't take this one and that one because you have too much. Well, this may be absolutely true. However, in another hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, that may change dramatically. Why? Well, you're getting tired. You know, what you had for breakfast is now digested and gone. You've changed the work that you're doing, and instead of being at work, now you're taking a little nap or something. In other words, many factors have changed. And so it's an important principle when you're determining nutritional needs is not to get hung up on your needs in the moment. Now, there are times when you want to know what you need in the moment. That would be certainly in the case of an emergency, for example. In other words, let's say you faint. Well, that's an instant thing, and you need to do something right away. You know, if someone goes into a coma or their blood sugar is dropping very fast. And then you need to know exactly. And that's where blood tests are very good that way. They, you know, because they give you an instant reading and you can take an instant action. However, unfortunately, that's not the case most of the time. In other words, most of the time, we're not in some emergency. And the kind of nutrition programs we're designing for people are not for today. That's not what we're interested in. We want to know what the person should eat for the next months or something, or longer, at least weeks or months. And so that's often where blood tests fall down, and kinesiology tests and radionic tests and other machines that are measuring in the moment. They have their advantages, as I say, because if you're in some sort of crisis, that's what you want to know, is what do I do right now to get out of this? The hair test is different that way. It offers a different perspective. It takes about 3 months for the hair to grow out when you take, say, an inch of hair. And so it gives a long-term reading. Now, again, this has to be understood. You're not looking at what happened today or yesterday. That means that if there's some crisis going on, you won't get very much information about it if you cut someone's hair and send it in. But if you want to know the deep patterns, the sort of dynamic, how can I put it, long-term patterns of this person, how have they been behaving over the last several months in general, average, then you get a very nice picture. And for most nutrition work, where we're working on chronic disease particularly and tendencies, that's what we want. We want to know what is the person's tendency. You know, do they tend to get infections? Do they tend to get inflammation? Do they tend to get blood sugar problems? Or do they tend toward high blood pressure or low blood pressure? And those things can be read very nicely because we are measuring
the long-term picture. So again, that's sort of a bigger systems idea than in the moment kind of stuff. These are some of the most important systems principles, I would say. Now, if you want to learn more about this, I do recommend the book Nutritional Balancing and Hair Mineral Analysis, written by yours truly. I don't know that there's any other books around that really go into this. I happened to work with Dr. Paul Eck for 14 years closely. I was his right-hand man, so I got to learn all this stuff. Again, I don't take credit for it. It was basically his work. Maybe I've expressed it and refined a few things, but it's basically his work. By the way, another systems idea is this: is the interaction between the minerals and personality, and the two are very, very close, and there's two chapters in the book devoted to emotions and personality and mineral patterns on tests, because some of it is remarkable how you can predict personality patterns and emotions from a mineral test, and vice versa. If you know a personality, you can predict mineral patterns because they're related to hormones and glandular function, basically. But it's remarkable, but it's all part of the same system, because the basic system is you, and you are personality, emotions, and chemistry. Anyway, this book is available, Nutritional Balancing and Hair Mineral Analysis. And then also there are a number of articles on my website, www.drlwilson, as in Dr. L. Wilson, drlwilson.com. There are a number of other books. There's another book with a lot of articles called Healing Ourselves on that website, although I'm slowly putting all those articles up on the website for people. Those are some other resources for exploring this in more detail, because it goes from the general to the very specific, and then we can go into specific diseases and specific patterns of the whole system that go with those diseases. Some people know there's a personality for most diseases. There are mineral patterns for most diseases, for every disease. And there are homeostatic states associated with each of those conditions. I think with that, this will conclude this tape.